Graham Greene was a novelist by vocation and temperament. He published more than 60 works in a writing life that stretched from his first book of poetry, written when he was a student at Oxford in 1925, to a book of essays he completed just before his death in 1991, at the age of 86. But Graham Greene's legacy resides and survives in more than 100 major characters he created in 28 novels and 8 plays. Each character was distinct. A few of them, like the reprobate priest of The Power and the Glory, or the sexy, opinionated septuagenarian of Travels with My Aunt, are among the most identifiable characters of 20th century literature. Graham Greene sold tens of millions of books. He tried to commit suicide at least half a dozen times, not in depression after splintered love affairs, of which he had many, or failed books, of which he had few, but because his life seemed flat. He worked for British intelligence in Africa during World War II, after he'd already escaped death when his house was bombed during the Blitz of London and he was with a lover, his life saved by his infidelity. He told a BBC interviewer in 1980 that every novelist must have a splinter of ice somewhere inside that takes notes while others merely weep. He remembered once being in a hospital for minor surgery.
I was just 22 or something like that, and the child was brought in who his leg had been broken at football, and nobody had treated it very seriously. And then suddenly there was a scurry around the beds, screens were put up, and the parents were summoned, and the parents broke down in, like, in a woman's magazine, you know, why didn't you wait for us, and so on, screaming in their ward. And everybody except myself put on their earphones of their radio. But I'm afraid I listened.
Today is the 100th anniversary of Graham Greene's birth. Various celebrations and symposiums scheduled this weekend in and around London, France, and the United States. Graham Greene was a man of faith, and a faithless husband and lover, a skeptic, a believer, a sympathizer, a cad, and in the estimation of so many, a genius. His most vivid characters were not heroes, like the selfish, jaded reporter in The Quiet American, the kidnapped, drunken diplomat in the honorary consul, or the vacuum cleaner salesman who becomes a spy in Our Man in Havana. They were mundane men who lacked courage, but found mercy. Norman Sherry, who's just completed his third and last volume of The Life of Graham Greene, remembers the novelist's remarkable eyes.
He seemed to be blind, and he'd hold on to your hand as you're shaking it, and he wouldn't seem to let you go. And these eyes would stare at you, and they were not blue, they were light blue, almost a watery blue. They frightened me. I thought they were almost satanic, but every woman liked them.
Graham Greene hid much about his own life, his affairs, his espionage activities, his frequent visits to bordellos. Then again, he seemed to store some of the fine details of these experiences away for his novels. He wrote 500 words a day or more, 7 days a week, for more than 50 years. Yet Norman Sherry could find no one who saw Greene actually writing in his small, careful script on notepads. Friends like Malcolm Muggeridge and Evelyn Waugh envied his discipline and resented his seeming effortlessness. Norman Sherry notes,
"When he says he only writes 500 words a day, yes, but he was always thinking of his books. He would wake himself up 4 or 5 times a night in order to find his dreams and put them cleverly into his books."
He became known as the novelist who took on great themes in perilous places, his own London and the Blitz, the first flames of rebellion against colonialism in Vietnam, massacres in Kenya, and Haiti and Cuba in the grip of despots. The Comedians was Greene's Haiti novel. A character, Dr. Maggio, who is secretly plotting against the government, leaves behind a note for a friend. That section is read here by Kojo Namdi.
"Catholics and communists have committed great crimes, but at least they have not stood aside like an established society and been indifferent. I would rather have blood on my hands than water like Pilate. I know you and love you well. And I am writing this letter with some care because it may be the last chance I have of communicating with you. I implore you, a knock on the door may not allow me to finish this sentence. So take it as the last request of a dying man. If you have abandoned one faith, do not abandon all faith. There is always an alternative to the faith we lose. Or is it the same faith under another mask?"
Graham Greene made his own characters into masks. He had calling cards imprinted with their names, would hand them out in bars and bordellos. Norman Sherry says,
When he puts down the Nemba character, he becomes alive because the person at the door says, "Oh, it's very nice to see you, Major, etc., etc." And, of course, he doesn't exist. So he played the card game and, therefore, a novelist in real life.
Couldn't have fooled many people. For much of his life, Graham Greene was the most famous novelist in England. Did he feel that the calling cards made his characters momentarily seem flesh and blood real, or that taking on their names put a mask over his own flesh and blood frailties? Even a book he called an entertainment, like Travels with My Aunt, has comic monologues that encourage meek men, like Henry the bank clerk, to step out of his commonplace life and mock mortality. As Aunt Augusta tries to convince him to travel to the world's wild places, as Graham Greene did, this section is read by Elaine Fantham.
Do you know what you think about when you can't sleep in your double bed? Not of women. You'll think how every day you're getting a little closer to death. It will stand there as close as the bedroom wall, and you'll become more and more afraid of the wall, because nothing can prevent you from coming nearer and nearer to it every night. Tomorrow you may be shot in the street by a policeman because you haven't understood Guarani, or a man may knife you in a cantina because you can't speak Spanish and he thinks you are acting in a superior way. But, my dear Henry, if you live with us, you won't be edging day by day across to any last wall. The wall will find you of its own accord and without your help, and every day you live will seem to you a kind of victory. I was too sharp for it that time, you will say when night comes, and afterwards you'll sleep well.
Norman Cherry says,
Greene went under many names, just as he had his cards, and that represented him approaching a novelist technique, the one filtering into the other. His real life filters into the novels come out and are walking and talking as great characters and great living individuals. We'll never see his like again.
There's a last revelation in Norman Cherry's biography that could occupy literary critics for years. Until the end of his life, Graham Greene continued to pass information to British intelligence. He'd write fierce denunciations of Western policies in the Times of London, be warmly received by Fidel Castro in Cuba, Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, or Mikhail Gorbachev in Moscow, and then secretly report on his travels to British intelligence. Now, was he a spy who was incidentally a novelist? A novelist who was an occasional spy? Was his literary life a cover for espionage? Or did Graham Greene just enjoy what Norman Cherry calls the card game, in which beliefs and friends could be shuffled, turned over, and shuffled all over again? And was that why he became a novelist? Was it the same faith under another mask? Graham Greene once told the BBC that novelists and spies share some of the same gifts and instincts.
I think he is something of the same thing, and especially the double agent, perhaps. Because, in a sense, the writer is a double agent. He may have a wicked character, but has a feeling of sympathy for the wicked character.
Graham Greene, who was born 100 years ago today. You can find more on the writer at our website, npr.org.